Once, First Years, a podcast for all but geared toward adult first-time readers of Harry Potter, who need a space to enjoy each book and have adult conversations about it. My name is Sarah, and I'm honored that you've allowed me on this journey with you. Crack open a butterbeer, grab a seat, and let's discuss. Welcome to episode 24 of First Years. So today we have our second half of our discussion with Emily Cavender on chapters 17 through 20. Right before we jump into that, I just have a quick announcement. So this Friday, the 30th, we are having a First Years Mischief Night happy hour on our Instagram Live at First Years Pod. So all you have to do is pour yourself a drink and join us, and we're going to chat about Harry Potter. You can bring questions. I'll have questions. We're just going to hang out, have a good time, drink, and chat about Harry Potter. So I hope to see you guys there and enjoy the episode.
Okay, so I'm going to pivot to Sirius Black because I think there's just as much to say about him in this situation as well. It is clear that he feels very guilty about the situation.
Yeah. As soon as Harry says, like, you killed my parents, he's like, I'm not going to deny it.
Exactly.
Which, like, probably wasn't the smartest thing to say when you're trying to convince that them of your innocence. But his guilt was, like, so strong that he immediately reaffirms what they think.
The entire beginning scene with Sirius Black
so frustrating.
Is just... It is dramatic, and it is also just, like, the worst way to go about it.
Oh, yeah.
When he specifically says, there will only be one murder tonight. Like,
can you, like, in front of some 13, 14-year-old kids who think you're a murderer, and then you say, there will only be one murder tonight. Like a fucking horror movie. Like, no.
Stop making it more complicated than it needs to be, because... Then that's why you have, like, such a harder time throughout the middle of this scene trying to get these kids to listen to you.
Yeah, it takes
because this
so
is how
long.
You started out.
you fucked up real bad at the beginning of this, which then made this big reveal that Peter Pettigrew is a human take, what, 3 chapters?
Yeah, yes.
Like, it took 3 whole chapters from you seeing Sirius to revealing that Scabbers is actually Peter, a human. Like, if he had started that conversation out by saying, I know you think I'm a murderer, but I'm not. The rat's actually Peter Pettigrew, and he framed me this whole time, and I'll explain everything if you just shut up. Like, that's all he had to do.
Hermione,
if she had heard that, you know how her brain works. She would have been like, what did you just say? Okay, everybody shut up. I want to listen to what he has to say. Like, if he had gotten enough detail out quickly enough, Hermione's brain would have been, like, making connections so quickly, and she would have given him the floor to explain. But instead, crazy pants over here, there will only be one murder tonight. Like, no. So dumb.
I know. And I definitely want to talk about sort of the crazy aspect of Sirius, because I think there is something there. But
he was definitely mentally ill at the time.
But before we dive into that, I do want to talk about, like, one little detail where the only 2 people we've seen in this series that have used Voldemort's name have been Harry and Dumbledore. Yet Sirius uses Voldemort's name. He doesn't use he who must not be named or you know who. He's, like, the only other person who actually comes out and is, like, rather comfortable saying Voldemort.
No hesitation. Yeah. So Sirius was growing up in the time when Voldemort became a bad guy and people stopped saying his name and started saying, like, you know who, or he who must not be named. So, you know, young boys being who they are, a part of it could have just been him being like, I'm going to say Voldemort, even though I know everyone around me hates it because it's going to make me look cool.
Right.
Part of it, and that's like reading between 7,000 lines, but that's, like, where my brain goes really. But also, I mean, it could just be the fact he's been in freaking Azkaban for 12 years. He is not stable. And the only thing that he says he was able to cling to was that he was innocent. Like, the Dementors took every happy memory away from him. So all he's been living with is the horribleness of his life and clinging to this knowledge that he's innocent and that people think that he was a spy for Voldemort, but he actually wasn't. So it could be that, like, for 12 years, all he's been thinking is, like, I didn't work for Voldemort. I didn't betray James and Lily, and I know this to be true. So it's easier for him to say his name. That's also kind of pulling at straws. I don't know.
But I'm glad you brought that up, because Harry attacks Sirius, like, muggle style. Oh. And Sirius, who has said... there's only going to be one murder tonight, starts choking Harry.
In self-defense.
Right. But, like, isn't trying to, like, necessarily get Harry off. Like, he is, like, choking him. Okay. So
When I read it very much as this boy literally tackled me and is trying to beat me to death. And the only thing I can do to stop him from attacking me is I'm going to grab his neck. And then
Okay.
I don't think he was, like, literally.
The way I read it was that, like, he chokes Harry and he doesn't let go until Hermione, like, kicks him.
Well, because Harry hasn't let go. It's hard to read a fight, you know, but.
Yeah. But I also think, like, there are probably other ways for, like, Sirius to get the upper hand besides, like, trying to suffocate Harry. But, like, so. My question is, like, do we think this is, like, a byproduct of him just being desperate after waiting for 12 years to, like, finally do this thing?
Definitely.
Or do we think that it's, like, he truly has sort of lost something while he's been in Azkaban? Or is it both?
When I read that scene, it was, like, Harry attacked him. He's starved, very weak physically. There's this extremely, like, fit because Harry is an athlete. So this like in shape kid has tackled me. The only thing I can do is I'm going to choke him to get him to let go, because Sirius's motivation as soon as they got to the shack was not to explain himself to Harry. First things first, he wanted to kill Peter. And this right. all was distracting from that. And like the rat could have gotten away in this like altercation they're having.
Mm.
But I feel like for Sirius, it was like, get the fuck off me. I got to kill this rat and then I'll explain what's going on.
And speaking of killing Peter, Sirius, when he's talking about killing Peter, says, "I meant to."
Mm.
And I think a lot of us, as Harry Potter fans, find him being in Azkaban an injustice because he's innocent, right?
Mm-hmm.
But do we think that Sirius always would have gone to jail? Because his other plan was to kill Peter for betraying his friend. So he was framed for a murder that it sounds like he would have committed anyway.
It's hard to answer that question because at this point in the series, people don't know how fucked up the wizarding judicial system is.
Well, we've gotten insights into it. We see with Buckbeak that they bring an executioner to the appeal.
Well, I think maybe all we've heard at this point is that Sirius was sent to jail without a trial.
Yeah, I was going to ask about that. I have wrongly accused without a trial in my notes, and then I couldn't remember if that's what he actually said or not.
So I feel like, okay, so Sirius goes to check on Peter. Peter's not on the hideout. He's like, oh, fuck. He goes to check on James and Lily, finds them dead. And his only thought in this moment is, I'm going to kill him. like Sirius and James, in my mind, had like they were such good friends. It was like borderline like codependency. Like they were the best of friends. And then he finds him dead and his wife dead. And all he can think about is like, you took them from me. So his goal, he was like, I'm going to go track him down and I'm going to kill him. Do I think he actually would have done it? Is a very, it's a very interesting question. Because
mm-hmm.
like, you know, you want to think he was going to try, but then he would have stopped himself just like Harry. But I don't know that he would have stopped himself.
But I also, I don't think Sirius has the same sort of.
He's not the perfect good guy. Like,
there's a lot
of darkness there.
I didn't want to be like, I don't think he has the same morals as Harry, but I don't think he does.
I mean, I think it's possible. I think if he had shown up and cornered Peter, I definitely think he was capable of actually killing him on the spot. Do I think he would have gone to jail for it? Probably not, but y'all don't know how fucked up the judicial system is yet, so.
We will get there.
We'll get there.
We're starting to see.
In the fifth book.
We're starting to see the injustices within the wizarding world, and sort of one of the big themes that we've spoken about in regards to this book so far in these episodes has been about sort of trusting the systems in place and maybe sort of a breaking of trust in the systems in place, especially what we've seen where it's been like, oh yeah, we're going to catch Black. And then they don't catch Sirius Black, you know? So, and as well as the ethics of having Dementors guard the prisons and having, you know, there's definitely like a bunch of human rights violations in Azkaban.
It's like really fucked up.
So I think we are starting to see sort of the beginnings of that.
Yeah. So I guess maybe the short answer is, I think he was capable of doing it. I don't know if I think he would have done it or not, though. I think at this point in his life, if Harry hadn't stepped in, he absolutely would have murdered Peter without blinking.
I agree.
He and Lupin both were like, okay, bye-bye. Like, let's go. Because honestly, and this is another tangent I don't even want to start, but I think that Peter took more away from Remus than he took from Sirius, in my opinion. But that's a long tangent that we don't have to talk about yet.
Well, speaking of, we can sort of get into that, because in regards to Remus's and Sirius's friendship, Sirius thought that Lupin was the spy. Mm-hmm. Lupin, like everybody else, thought Sirius was the spy. But they do seem to forgive each other immediately, right? Mm-hmm. So... or at least, like, when Lupin first shows up, he uses Sirius's first name. He isn't about to, like, attack him. Mm-hmm. So, under what circumstances did Sirius think Lupin was the spy?
So, I mean, that's hard to talk about, because I feel like we don't get a lot of context into that until...
We don't. I just wonder with...
bookish, maybe?
At least with Lupin, like, believing Sirius betrayed everybody, there was, like, evidence to that, right? Mm-hmm. So, but it seems that Remus and Sirius respect each other and trust each other, you know, still after all of this. So, like, what did Sirius, I don't know.
I feel like, if you put yourself in the positions that everybody was in the wizarding world at this time, like, you don't know who's good, you don't know who's bad. Bad things are happening everywhere. You know that Voldemort's going after good people and either turning them or killing them. So, like, anybody around you could be a bad person. And no matter what you're doing to fight, like, you know that it's not going well. So you learn that your two best friends in the whole world, like, someone is turning secrets about them over to Voldemort and he's going after them. You're going to start questioning everyone around you. And so I think both Sirius and Remus were put in this horrible position of, I know it's not me. It's probably not Peter because he's a weak ass bitch. So it's gotta be you.
Or so they thought.
Yeah, or so they thought.
But speaking of Peter, I do want to ask this question. We learn that he really only does things out of self-interest or self-preservation. Mm-hmm. And he acts out of cowardice, which is not a Gryffindor trait. I would argue that his whole plan of, like, faking his death and, you know, framing Sirius seems like a Slytherin thing to do, honestly, to me.
Like, doing whatever it takes to get to the point, like to, what's the phrase? Doing whatever it takes to get the result that you want.
Right.
Is a very much a Slytherin trait.
So why is he in Gryffindor?
So... my, like, from an author's perspective on this is that the entire series up until this point, we've been told there's not a witch or wizard who didn't go bad that wasn't a Slytherin. All we know up until now is that every bad guy ever has been a Slytherin.
Well, besides Quirrell, but yes.
Well, they never said in the books what he was, but he was a Ravenclaw, right?
Yeah, he was.
Yeah. So, like, that was one of the first things that Harry learned about Slytherins, is that they're all evil. It's like Hagrid plants that idea super early and destroys every Slytherin's life.
I know.
But this is the moment, I think, like, we're talking about, like, the ultimate betrayal. Like, what's like, more shocking than one of the good guys really being bad this whole time? Like I said earlier, my roommate loves Harry Potter. I asked him this question earlier when we were talking, and he said that Peter, his whole life, chose to go places where he knew he'd be protected. Like, the people who were looked at as being the strongest, like, that's where he wanted to be. He wanted to be with the strongest people. So going to Hogwarts, that's the Gryffindors, and he wanted to be a Gryffindor. And we know from Harry sorting that they will take your preferences into account sometimes. So
sometimes,
like, if little baby Peter is sitting on the sorting hat stool and they're throwing options around, he's probably sitting on the stool like, put me in Gryffindor. That's where all the strong people are. I want to be one of them. I'll be safe. As he grows up, he learns that's not necessarily the truth, which then causes him to shift his alliances so severely. But it's an interesting thing to think about. Like, if he had the choice, he probably would have picked Gryffindor because he knew he'd be safe there.
Now, I have a statement and a question in regards to that. So my statement is that I actually think that betraying your friends is not a Slytherin thing to
Absolutely.
Do.
Absolutely. It's not.
The plan itself of how he goes about it, I think, is very clever. And I think that is a Slytherin aspect. But I think actually betraying your friends is not a Slytherin thing.
I don't have the first book by me, but it was in, like, the very first book sorting ceremony. The sorting hat says, like, Slytherin is where you're going to find your true friends.
Exactly.
Like, Slytherins don't betray each other.
No.
But I think the way that he did it, like, the reasoning was all about, like, self-preservation. And that is very much a Slytherin trait. But a Slytherin always would have looked out for their own first.
Absolutely. Now, my question is, we've seen that through Harry that the sorting hat does take your choice into account. Then how does the sorting hat balance people's actual traits with their preferences? And if your choice matters, like, what's the point of a sorting hat?
Yeah, so this is something that has always been interesting to me, and not for the podcast, but just, like, fun tidbit here. So, like, you know, I've talked about, like, at work, we have our Slack channel all about Harry Potter.
Mm-hmm.
So we do all of our stuff, and, like, you win points for your house. And so, like, from the beginning, we always said, it's, like, whatever your Pottermore house is, that's your house. And then we learned, like, 2 years in, we do these discussion threads, and I asked, like, did you always think that you were going to be the house that you're in, or did you maybe think it was something else growing up? Because, like, I always thought I was a Ravenclaw until the test came out. And I was like, oh, I'm actually a Slytherin. And when we did that test, it was like 70% of the people in Gryffindor said, oh, well, actually, Pottermore put me in this other house, but I just decided I was a Gryffindor, so I'm in Gryffindor. And it was the most infuriating thing. It only happened with Gryffindors, which, you know, as a Slytherin,
interesting,
like, our rivals and everything, but it's like our work slack channel gets really heated between Slytherins and Gryffindors all the time. So that's like a fun fact for you. And now I've forgotten my place. Like when we were talking about earlier, what's the point of a sorting hat? So in the series, like, we see some people are given time on the stool and others aren't. So, like, Draco Malfoy, they said the hat barely touched his head before it screamed Slytherin. So, like, Draco didn't have a choice, but, like, his choice would have been Slytherin if he'd been given one.
Right.
Then they mention Seamus Finnegan in the first book, sat on the stool for over a minute before it picked Gryffindor for him. Hermione sat on the stool for a good chunk of time as well before they picked Gryffindor. So I think when you have someone that's, like, so clearly suited to just the one house above the others, like Draco, like, they're not even going to take the time to have a conversation with you in your head. They're just going to send you on your way. But then you look at someone like Harry, for example, who was really well suited for Slytherin, but also really well suited for Gryffindor. Then that's when the hat was like, okay, you're saying you don't want Slytherin? Tell me about that. Okay, cool. I'll put you in Gryffindor. That's where you want to go. You'll go there. I know that you'd be successful either way. I'll let you have what you want. I don't think that that choice is given to every student. I think it really depends. And then like we learn about hat stumps, and those really are like, you get to pick where you're going to go. But right. I think someone like Harry, who's not really a hat stump, but is like borderline a hat stump, like, and maybe it's just because Harry's perfect and special and the main character of the series that he gets a choice, but I don't think that everyone would have gotten one.
I'm pretty sure Hermione was a hat stall.
Hat and stall. Then... You're right. Not hat stump. I said hat stump like 10 times. Yeah, I think Hermione was a hat stall.
Yeah. There's one other character that I feel like needs to get honorable mention so far in this book, and that is Crookshanks.
I knew you were about to say Crookshanks. Crookshanks is like the unsung hero of Prisoner of Azkaban.
Literally.
The only one from the second that he laid eyes on Scabbers, he was like, alert, alert, that's a 40-year-old man. Somebody do something about this. He's sleeping in a bed with a 13-year-old child. And nobody was listening to him. So he was like, okay, whatever. I'm going to take this into my own paws, and I'm going to kill this little fucker because this is not a rat. And what does he get? He gets literally abused by Ron and Harry. In the fight, Harry kicked Crookshanks at one point.
Yes.
And then when Crookshanks jumped on Sirius's chest,
Harry's ready to kill him.
He was like, I'll kill that cat. In cahoots with Sirius this whole time anyway. Like, to me, honestly, that was more shocking. Like, that someone would be willing to kill an animal than over a human. But that's just, like, my own love of animals. And I value mm-hmm. them in my life way more than humans like, in yeah. general. But the fact that this kid was like, I'll fucking kill a cat. you're not going to move. You're prepared to die. Things deserved better.
I do feel bad because I've had several episodes where I've had to talk about Crookshanks, and I think I still hold this true though, like even now knowing that Crookshanks was actively helping Sirius Black. I had spoken about Hermione's sort of lack of boundaries when it comes mm-hmm. to Crookshanks, and
not the best pet owner.
No, like her actively bringing him into the boys' dorm when mm-hmm. her cat has gone after Scabbers multiple times and she doesn't know that Scabbers is actually Peter Pettigrew, I still think is unacceptable.
Yeah, I can't imagine. Like, there was a dog that bit Sophie once at work because my office is dog friendly. And I was like, I will kill the dog. I will kill the owner. Like, how dare you put my child's life at risk? If that person had like willingly, knowingly brought that dog back around mine again, I would have lost it. So yeah. like the fact that it, and like, I don't even know the girl to this day. I don't even know the owner's name. I don't know who it was. There's our office has hundreds of people, but if it had been my best friend, my best friend's pet tried to kill my pet, like we would not be friends anymore. And if she tried to bring that pet back into my home where my animals live, like it would have been like World War III. Like game over, I will cut you, get out of my house. The fact that Hermione like repeatedly brought her pet into the same space as Scabbers when she knows that Crookshanks is trying to murder it was not the smartest like pet owner move. Just throwing that out there. Like you can't control a cat like you can control a dog. Like you can put a dog on a right. leash. You can't do that with a cat. Like they're gonna do what they want wherever they want.
Yeah.
So don't bring your cat into the room with a rat.
Right, exactly. Exactly.
Oh, Hermione. She's so smart, but she's so stupid.
I have one more question before I dive into my werewolf stuff. And it's a non-question with a non-answer. But I couldn't help but think about it while I was rereading these chapters in preparation for this episode. What would have happened if Scabbers was just a rat?
That's so funny. Okay, so they're like, this rat is Peter Pettigrew. And Ron finally
because, like, Remus specifically says, like, this spell won't hurt him if he is just a rat. And yeah. then I was just like, what if nothing happened?
They do the spell and nothing happens. I think Remus would have been like, okay, well, that's not what we thought was going to happen. Our bad. Here's your pet back. serious. We need to have a conversation. Let's go outside. There's some people looking for you. Like,
oh my God.
That would have, and especially because at that point, like, nobody had believed anything that was happening until right before Scabbers turns into Peter. And so, like, you've managed to convince them all, and they're on your side, and then it doesn't turn out to be Peter, they would have been like, oh my God. Hey, yeah, we're down here. Oh, it's so funny.
I just could not but think of it.
Oh God.
Just like a moment, there'd just be like a moment of silence.
R.I.P. Oh God, that's so funny.
So this section of chapters ends with all hell breaking loose.
Oh God. Oh yeah. Okay. So when you said we were doing chapter 17 through 20, and there's only 22 chapters, in my head, I was like, okay, well, the last two chapters are probably just the like wrap up leaving Hogwarts. And then I started reading and I was like, oh, we're stopping here. Yep. There is so much left that hasn't happened in this book.
Yep. Yep. Pretty much.
Ooh, so many things.
Yeah.
This episode's going to be great.
I hope so. So chapter 20 ends with Peter Pettigrew escaping. Harry essentially starting to get kissed by a Dementor.
Yeah, like they lowered the hood, which Remus said they've never done to anyone that didn't get kissed. Like, nobody knows what they look like, but Harry knows what they look like
now. Yes, and it sounds horrifying. And they are saved by somebody, but we don't know who.
Dun, dun, dun. So another looked very familiar.
Right. So who could that be? But I want to dive into, I did a big deep dive on werewolves. So I want to dive into that. There's werewolf beliefs have been around for a very long time. And some of the things we've sort of overlap with what we see in Harry Potter, but a lot of it actually doesn't and was like completely new to me. So werewolves are humans that have the ability to shapeshift into a wolf. And they're either under a curse or an affliction of some kind from like a bite or a scratch from another werewolf. And they shift on the fur, on the fur moon.
The fur moon.
And they shift on the full moon. So we also hear the term lycanthropy be thrown around in regards to werewolves as well, which is a word that refers to, it's an ancient Greek word. That refers to the ability to transform oneself into a werewolf, and also talks about like the act itself of doing it. However, lycanthropy is actually a quote rare psychological condition that causes people to believe they're changing into a wolf or another animal.
Like, that's the IRL definition of lycanthropy.
Yeah.
Ooh, so it's like a mental disorder.
Yes. So they're technically different. The beginnings or the first appearances where we see werewolves are in the Gilgamesh epic, Nordic folklore, and Greek mythology.
I have not heard the word Gilgamesh in like
since like
how long has it been high school? Since I graduated
high school? Yeah.
Throwback.
So it was very widespread in European folklore. And the beliefs really became popular at the same time as like the witch trials were super popular during the late Middle Ages and the early modern period.
Interesting.
And they actually, like, so there were werewolf trials, not just witch trials, in the area that is now, I almost said Slytherin, area that is now Switzerland.
Oh, I was not expecting you to say Switzerland.
Yeah, in the early 15th century, sort of through the 18th century. So some werewolves can transform anytime, but those who are specifically turned by another werewolf change involuntarily on the full moon. And fun fact, France had a really big werewolf problem. So there are, like, lots of reports of werewolf attacks and trials in 16th century France. And a lot of the cases, there was clear evidence of like cannibalism, but not necessarily a connection to wolves specifically.
So like a lycanthrope who thought they were a wolf attacking a human.
Probably, cannibalism. Most likely.
Yeah.
So some people suggest that like, since wolves have had like a seriously like bad rap for like years, like centuries, and people have like always like hated wolves, that that's sort of why this idea was attached to wolves specifically.
Yeah, like why wolves? Like why aren't people like werebears, you know?
Right. I did read that like in areas where like wolves aren't native, that it'll be like a were and whatever animal, like a were hyena or a were tiger, you know, those, that concept also exists.
I know this was a crossover fanfic that I didn't know was a crossover until I got halfway through, but it was like another book series. I don't remember what it was called, but there was like were everything.
And so, oh yeah.
Like the main character was someone, she was like a normal human that was like looking for bad people with magical powers, I think, but like she had relationships with like, there were werewolves, there were were-leopards, there was a were-leopard was like a big one.
Right.
There's all kinds of wares, which I'd never heard of. Mm-hmm. I only knew werewolves from like, what's that? Teen Wolf.
Teen Wolf, yeah.
Not the MTV one, but like the growing up. Oh, the Big Wolf on Campus or something. What was it called?
Big Wolf on Campus?
There was some, that's not it. It was something like that. There was some like older show where there was like the like hotshot jock guy was like secretly a werewolf in their high school or something. Like that was my like first introduction to werewolves. And and then, you know, Harry Potter had werewolves, and then Twilight had werewolves in a very different fashion. And then at the end they were like, just kidding, they're not werewolves, they're shapeshifters. Yeah.
Still not over it.
What was the name of that freaking show? I'm gonna text my mom, she'll know.
The Holy Roman Empire was actually the place where they held on to like werewolf beliefs for longer than everybody else, well past like 1650. So one of the more famous cases that actually led to like, you know, sort of the popularity of werewolf trials and the persecution of werewolves in French-speaking and German-speaking Europe was the case of Peter Stump, which was in 1589. And he was a farmer that was accused of werewolfery, witchcraft, and cannibalism.
Werewolfery?
Yes. and he's actually considered now to just have been like a serial killer instead of like a real werewolf.
Interesting.
And most of the evidence points to the people who were on trial. It was more of like being a werewolf was like an explanation for serial killers instead.
Is turning into a true crime podcast.
Right. So many of these people were burned at the stake or sentenced to life imprisonment. And the sort of criteria of being a werewolf changed. The church, I know you will not be surprised by this, ended up changing its stance between the late 1500s and the early 1600s into werewolves are bad because they're in league with Satan.
Of course. The devil.
So, like, actually a lot of people who were, like, on trial for being a werewolf were actually sentenced to death because of witchcraft, not because of being a werewolf. And some people did admit to working with the devil or making a deal with a, quote, man in black. Although some people also said that they transformed into werewolves in order to go down to hell and fight demons.
I'm sorry. What?
Yes. But most of these confessions, like they were back then, were given after torture sessions.
Oh yeah, they were like confess your crimes while basically giving them like an exorcism or something. Big Wolf on Campus was something. I did not think that was the name, but it was.
I mean, I know. Okay, I only know. Seven seasons. Like
it came out in 1999. Anyway, that was a distraction. Continuing. Okay, so they're torturing people, which is basically like the like a modern day equivalent is like confessing under duress.
Right.
They're forcing you to admit something and you're only saying yes to get whatever they're doing to stop.
Yes, exactly. So there were a lot of ways to identify somebody as a werewolf. One method was to cut somebody, and if there was fur in the wound, underneath, they were a werewolf. There was a Russian superstition that if somebody had bristles under their tongue, they also were a werewolf.
The underside of your tongue?
Yeah. They were supposed to look exactly like wolves in wolf form, except they had no tail and they were bigger. And in Sweden, they thought that the werewolves would run on three legs and stick the fourth one, their fourth leg out behind them to look like a tail.
That's Sweden. What are you doing? I love you so much, but no.
One of the things that actually overlaps with, I think, what we see and what we were talking about earlier was that, after going back to their human forms, werewolves were usually weak, debilitated, and underwent painful, nervous depression.
Yeah, sounds about right. if your whole body goes through a brutal transformation into an entirely other creature, then, when you switch back, you're probably going to pass out for a solid 24 hours.
Right.
It's interesting, though, that Polyjuice potion, it didn't really hurt, did it? It just tasted bad?
I don't think so. I don't think it hurt. So
why isn't that hurt? But changing, maybe because you're still human and they talk about bones breaking when you change.
Yeah, they do talk about that a lot. Yeah. So there are plenty of methods of becoming a werewolf besides, I think the most popular one that we all know is if you get bitten by a werewolf, you become a werewolf. So back in the day, putting on a belt made of wolf skin would enable you to shapeshift.
A belt of wolf skin?
Yeah.
Do they just mean instead of a leather belt, it's a wolf skin belt? Because for some reason my brain was thinking
probably
more like a hula skirt of wolf skin. That's the visual.
I think that's sort of what I imagine, more of a pelt,
Yeah, pelts.
Yeah. Magic salves as well. Drinking rainwater out of the footprint of a werewolf, which we actually see in a TV show called Hemlock Grove, which I thought was really interesting.
Heard of it, but I've never seen it.
It's really good. You could sleep outside on a summer night with the full moon shining directly on your face, but it had to be on a specific Wednesday or Friday. So there's a little bit of planning there.
Yeah.
Also, they thought that it was supposed to be divine punishment by God or certain saints. And those who were excommunicated from the Roman Catholic Church were said to be werewolves.
Bet the Roman Catholic Church started that rumor.
So there were also a bunch of remedies to stop someone from being a werewolf, which is interesting to me because we in Harry Potter, we don't see that there's an actual cure. There's just something that can sort of manage.
Make it easier.
The symptoms. Physical exhaustion was said to purge out the werewolf from your body. Medicinally, with wolf's bane, which we will talk about in a second. Surgically, exorcism, striking somebody on the forehead with a knife, piercing their hands with nails, addressing the werewolf three times by their Christian name.
There's so much Jesus in this list.
Scolding and, of course, conversion to Christianity would would be a remedy.
Of course it's a remedy, because if you've been excommunicated, you got turned into a werewolf, Jesus will solve your problems.
And also, as I'm sure nobody will be surprised by, a lot of these remedies were fatal to the people who went through them.
Naturally, especially via surgery.
And yes.
The exorcism ones.
Right. So I looked into Wolfsbane a little bit, which is the potion we see that allows Lupin to keep his mind.
It's a real plant too, right?
It is a real plant.
Yeah.
It has purple flowers. It's actually very pretty. It can grow up to 3 feet tall. It is incredibly poisonous. It gets its name actually from being used to kill carnivores, like wolves, in the 18th century. It was used as a poison in both Greece and Rome, And it is actually mentioned in Hamlet.
Oh, fun fact.
So the poison itself, if it's taken in a large dose, paralyzes your nerves, lowers blood pressure, and then ends up stopping your heart. If it's taken in a smaller amount, it will upset the stomach and cause numbness in the face. So I can't help but wonder, like, what is it about this specific plant that, like, makes it, I'm assuming it's in the potion.
Yes. Do we get the ingredients?
No. We only learn that it is incredibly difficult to make, and a lot of people do not want to make it.
So I would assume that it's, like, the active ingredient, or, like, the most important ingredient in the Wolfsbane potion. Like, if you're going to name the potion after one plant, like, one of the ingredients, like, it's got to be, like, the most important ingredient there. Also, they probably like that the word wolf is in it, and we're talking about wolves. So I just Googled what wolfsbane flowers look like, and now I want a wolfsbane flower tattoo.
So all of that information I found about werewolves and the wolfsbane, I found super interesting. Do you have anything else you want to add to this episode before we wrap up?
I would just like to say that Remus and Sirius were in love, and this chapter is, these chapters really are what showed to me, like, even if you choose to believe that Remus and Sirius were not in love, I personally believe that Remus Lupin has the hardest life of anyone in the entire series. And I loved these chapters because it, like, it gave Remus something good for the first time in, like, 12 years. Like, his life, like, he lost everyone that day. Like, James and Lily are dead. He thinks Peter is dead. Sirius is in Azkaban. And then he's on his own for 12 years. And that, like, we don't know what happened in those 12 years, except we know that he can't find work. So, like, is he homeless? Is he, like, scraping by with muggle work? Is he doing horrible things in order to make ends meet? A lot of people assume that he was extremely depressed, probably an alcoholic during these times, because it's just like everything is terrible. He has no support system anymore, and he can't find any work, and he's just alone for 12 years. But then in these chapters, Sirius is back in his life, and he knows that Sirius is innocent. And it's like the first time that he's had something, like, truly hopeful happen, which is just, like, so important, because I love Remus so much and he deserves so much better. So I love these chapters because, like, finally, like, that moment where he and Sirius hug is just, like, everything to me, because I'm like, yes, Remus, you deserve this moment. Especially if you're me and you think they're in love.
Well, thank you so much for being here to help us through chapter 17 through 20.
I will scream about Harry Potter anytime.
I know. Well, thank you.
I'm really excited for your next episode. These next two chapters are juicy.
They are. This whole book is, like, so important. It's crazy.
I feel like people forget about this when they talk about their favorite book. I feel like the easy answer is Goblet of Fire.
Yeah.
But then every time, and that's, like, my go-to answer too. People ask
my, yeah, mine as well.
I usually say Goblet of Fire, and then someone else will say Prisoner of Azkaban, and I'm like, oh, you're right. It's Prisoner of Azkaban.
Yeah, it definitely stands out on its own within the series, just as far as the information we learn, and also Harry's, you know, for lack of a better word, transformation between books 2 and 3. So I'm excited to see us finish it up. Mm-hmm. Also, we're doing a first year's Mischief Night cocktail hour at 8 o'clock. Ooh. On the 30th. So if you guys are listening to this, make sure you mark your calendars, and we will see you guys next time.
Bye.
First Years is a production of Matchbook. It's produced by Quinn Parker and myself, Sarah Jones-Dittmeyer. All sources can be found in our show notes or on our website at authorsarahjonesdittmeyer.info/firstyearspodcast. That's Sarah with an H, and Dittmeyer is spelled Dittmeyer. Please remember that staying a Harry Potter fan is the biggest form of revolt that you can have, and we are committed to continuing to make this fandom and this community safe and welcoming to everybody.